You're listening to Visionaries by Wonder, a podcast where CEOs, founders, and leaders share their success stories with their host, Jeannie O, the founder of Wonder and an award-winning product strategy and UX design firm. We'll be exploring the world and connecting with inspiring individuals. Join us.
Welcome, fam. Today, we are thrilled to have David Mumford on our show. David is the Vice President of Operations at RevStar, where he brings over 10 years of experience across multiple industries, including e-commerce, design, education, hospitality, healthcare, and insurance. With his design-first approach and exceptional leadership skills, David excels at pulling together the best people, assets, and ideas to create specialized products that bring great concepts to life. He has worked with numerous companies to develop brands, design products, manage projects, and accelerate growth. So thank you for joining us today as we dive deeper into David's expertise. So David, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, so let's get us started. Like, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see managing remote product development teams?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges I'm facing at the moment is really getting the teams to work together and be more cohesive as a group, right? So I think there's a lot of benefits to us being a remote first company and having remote teams, right? You get access to a lot of interesting people in different countries and a lot of different perspectives and stuff. But trying to kind of meld all of those people together, obviously there's different time zones to contend with, language barriers sometimes, right? So trying to get everybody working cohesively, communicating, I think that's really the biggest challenge.
So where are some of the countries that your team is based and how do you get them to be more cohesive if that is your biggest challenge?
Yeah, so we have a pretty diverse group of people. We're based in the US. I'm up in Canada. We have people over in Ukraine and down in South America, primarily in Colombia. We have a build center down there. So we all try and work on the same time zone, obviously. And then just setting up kind of, you know, structured meetings and sort of process that helps everybody, you know, align on the same same kind of process and stay on the same page helps a lot.
Gotcha. So it must be early mornings for you then, because you're up in Vancouver and your office is out in Tampa.
Early mornings for me, yeah. A lot of 5 a.m., 6 a.m. starts for sure.
Oof. What's your morning routine like?
Basically, it's just sort of, you know, get up, grab a coffee and check Slack. You know, I'm usually, you know, getting on a couple calls in the morning. People are asking me questions to get their day started and stuff. So pretty morning focused schedule for me and just, you know, helping everybody get unblocked and moving in the beginning of the day.
Gotcha. So coffee and grind right away.
Coffee and grind. That's right.
And what are some of the strategies, you know, especially with having different cultures, right? Ukrainian culture is very different than South American cultures. Like, what are some of the strategies that you use to ensure that there's effective communication between these between your teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think setting the right expectations as a company is important, right? So we're a very collaborative organization. Communication is really important. So like setting those expectations, or even if there's like cultural differences between individual people or, you know, groups of people, you know, we all work together. We all follow the same kind of culture, have the same kind of values, right? So really establishing kind of those core behaviors and values of the company helps bring everybody together and work as a team, right?
Sure, of course. And so what are those values? And were you part of creating those values for the company?
Yeah, I was. They're, you know, nothing too crazy. We're very customer focused, so responsiveness is a big one, you know, being there for the customer, you know, answering things quickly, you know, getting answers, that type of thing. You know, working together, like collaboration, obviously speaking about that a lot. That's really important as well. You know, high quality kind of output of work. So just, you know, the basic stuff, but really driving those points home and, you know, focusing on those things as a team. That's sort of where we're at the moment.
Sure. I mean, I think with any service-based company, one of the key things is to be responsive and to be customer-focused mm-hmm. as much as possible.
Yeah.
Can you share an example with us on, like, you know, a successful remote project that you've worked on, and like what was it that made it so successful for you, for your team?
Basically all of our projects are remote projects. I think being responsive to the client brings the most success for us. So basically, setting up reoccurring meetings, touch points and stuff that bring the team together with the client, and everybody collaborates throughout the process, having a lot of transparency and collaboration. And we try a little bit to have a bit of a hybrid model as well with some of our clients, and that brings some success too. So basically what I mean by that is, you know, most of our team is remote, but maybe we'll have one product manager or something that works in the same city as the client. So they can go into the client's office and gather requirements, or, you know, talk through a roadmap or something like that. So it kind of personalizes the experience, but, you know, you still get all of that diversity in the team, which is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, we've done that on our team as well. We're with the initial kickoff of a project, we would fly the team in to meet with the clients, and we right. found that to be extremely successful, especially just to have that like face-to-face mm-hmm. interaction. So I think when people understand when people think of remote companies, they always think that it's like 100% remote, but it doesn't have to be 100% remote, or it doesn't have to be 100% in person. Like, there is a hybrid approach that does yeah. work really well. And I'd love to dive in a little bit deeper on that. Like, you know, is it just the one product manager that you send out, or do you specifically hire the product manager where your client is based? Walk us through that a little bit more.
We're based in Florida, in Tampa. Most of our clients are in that region. So we have quite a few people, you know, hired in Tampa that can go and meet with clients, do on sites, help plan things out, right? So it's not just product managers. We have like solution architects and other roles in the company that can go on site and meet with people and sit down. So yeah, it's definitely a good model to have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah. So if your team is mostly, or if you have a team based out in Tampa, like how did they find you out in Vancouver?
I just applied for a remote product manager position, actually. Nothing too crazy. They just had a job posting for a remote position, and I applied to that.
Gotcha. But you're now the VP of operations.
Yeah,
walk us through that journey a little bit more.
Yeah. So joined the company as a product manager. Did that for, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so. And then the company went through a bit of restructuring, and I kind of stepped up at that point into a more of a delivery kind of lead role. So overseeing a group of managers. Did that for another kind of 6 months to a year. And then have just worked up basically as we've scaled. We've been growing a lot in the last couple of years, basically doubling in size. So as we've scaled up the business, I've just helped with that growth and moved up through the organization.
Gotcha. And what's an advice that you would give someone who's in that product management role that wants a very similar accelerated growth as you? Like, how does someone go from being a product manager to then becoming a delivery lead to a VP of operations?
I think being able to wear a lot of different hats is important, right? As an entrepreneur or a business leader or anything, really the more useful you can be to help a company grow, the faster you'll rise, right? So if there's other things sort of outside of your role that you can take on, for instance, I, you know, helped with marketing and helped with sales and other areas, because as a smaller growing company, you can't go and hire all these like individual specialized roles, right? So the more you can help out with that type of, little you know, individual things that are, you know, helpful to the company, then the faster the company will grow and the more kind of input you'll have in the growth of the company.
Sure, of course. I mean, it seems kind of easy to say, right? Because a lot of people want that growth and they want to lend a helping hand where mm-hmm. they can. But I guess where I want to like dive us a little bit deeper into is, especially being a remote company, one of the things that I notice, at least with Wander, is different departments tend to operate quite in silo, right? So you mentioned as an example, like, you know, if the marketing team needs help, offering a hand there, and et cetera. But I guess when you're remote, you don't necessarily know, maybe it's different with your team, but like with mine, someone in the product team wouldn't necessarily know if someone in marketing would need help, if that makes sense. So I guess, can you give us an example of like, or be more specific about how someone can be more helpful or how they can take on, put on different hats in their organization, especially being remote where you don't necessarily always get information mm-hmm. available.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think, one of the big and sort of easy ones is building a relationship with the leadership at the company, right? Having phone calls or meetings or, flying down to see them in person, whatever the situation. But the more you can kind of get on the same page with kind of upper management, the more you can just step in and say, oh, I can help with that, right? I know how to do that, or let me try and figure that out, right? I think a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs appreciate that, right? The more you can take off of their plate, the easier their lives are, right? So if you can kind of position yourself to help them grow the company.
How do you build trust and accountability when, again, we're going to focus on being a remote team? How do you build that trust and accountability?
It really, for me, it comes down to communication. So to build trust with a team, I really get them to work together and share ideas and really try and, so we're very project focused, right? So there's these like teams that are basically a little pod. Basically flattening that out, right? Everybody has their individual roles, but everybody has a different perspective. So if they can start talking and working together and solving problems together, that builds a lot of trust within the team. And then you obviously have other people that oversee departments and stuff. Same kind of thing. Like if you can start to get them to work together, collaborate, problem solve, come up with solutions to things, then that builds a lot of trust within the organization. Basically empowering the other people, you know, besides myself at the organization to solve problems and help the rest of the team grow.
So what does that look like? And I'm trying to get to more specifics because a lot of what you're sharing with me, they all sound, you know, great on paper. This is like what every team wants. Like, yeah, let's get everybody in on a call together. Let's get everybody in a room together and have them solve their own problems. But what does that actually look like? Is it like a weekly meeting where everyone jumps in? Is there a specific agenda? Are you facilitating? Is someone else facilitating? Share us the details.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different levels to it. So I'll have one-on-one sessions, which are super important to help kind of the development of individuals, right? So those meetings are meant to, you know, check in with people, see how they're doing, see what they're working on, provide guidance, provide coaching. And that sort of helps them grow individually. But then as a group, I basically have reoccurring meetings. The sort of higher level sort of departments that are working together, that's not weekly, but it's basically once a month, I think we get together and we're focusing on some specific problem. So we're a software development company. We design applications for our clients. And one of the big challenges for us is scope creep, right? So clients will have new ideas and they want to add additional features. And so that's a problem that us as an organization are trying to solve. And we're constantly kind of tweaking and refining that. But basically, one thing we're working on right now is sort of locking in the different components that go into the sprint, right? So there's user stories, designs get created, test cases get written. So there's, you know, work being done from the project management team, from the design team, from the QA team, and really getting those people to kind of collaborate at the beginning, talk to the client, set everything in stone, and basically, you know, coming up with a process that locks all those different components before the developers start working. So once the sprint starts, you know, there isn't this kind of like scope creep and people asking for other things that weren't originally thought of. So yeah, I mean, that's more of a specific scenario of, you know, a problem we had, them sitting down, coming up with something that worked, and then implementing it across the projects.
Gotcha. Does it still happen, scope creep?
Oh yeah, all the time. Everybody's always wanting more, right? Especially as an agency, you know, clients are always coming up with new ideas, and even our own team is like, we could do this, we could do that, right? But you know, it's super important, especially when you're developing initial MVPs, to stick to a plan.
Yeah, I mean, and how do you manage that too, right? Because as you said, clients change their minds. There's always new ideas, and especially as you do product development and you go into strategy and research, you uncover new things too. And so, you know, that sways like where the product's going to go in the future, while the bill's racking up. And so, I guess, what's your general approach to ensure that you're still building the right product that's good for the market, good for the customer, and also good for the customer's wallet?
Yeah, and it sort of depends on the situation, for sure. But really being MVP focused is important. You want to build something that's usable, right, and functional, but basically just meets the minimum requirements for the client to, you know, start using it, start to get users, start to sell it, whatever the situation is. And you want to guide your team and guide the client to make those types of decisions that keep the project kind of on track and as simple as possible, right? The goal of building that initial version of the product is not to add as many cool things in as you can. It's really to take things out. Like, what do we absolutely need? What's going to bring the most value for the least amount of money? People burning through money and adding a ton of features up front tends to just extend everything out. People get frustrated. Like, there's not a lot of benefit to that, especially because you can just start loading things in later.
Oh yeah, because there's never going to be a limit to great ideas, and the clients always want everything all the time, and they wanted it yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. One of the great things I've recently learned, because, you know, we've also struggled with that too. It's like, how do you communicate and how do you ensure that there's no scope creep? And this sounds so simple, but someone recently taught me, they're like, just make sure that there's a deadline. Versus instead of leading with the functionalities that you're going to build and then estimating a timeline around the features, set a deadline instead and work your way backwards from that. Like, your deadlines should be absolutely non-negotiable, and you reduce scope based on that deadline as opposed to extending your timeline based on the scope. Yeah. I was like, you know, that's so simple. And yet, like, not a lot of people put that in practice.
No, it is a tough one to navigate. You know, a lot of clients will want to basically put everything they want into the first version of something. And I mean, that does work in some situations. But yeah, I mean, it tends to, that's the thing that gets pushed, right, is the timeline, because, you know, yeah, you can add stuff to the scope, but it's going to increase the budget, push out the timeline. And sometimes they're okay with it. And sometimes you'll kind of advocate for, you know, sticking to an MVP or sticking to a timeline or something. And they're like, no, we want all the stuff we want. Right. So yeah, I mean, it is a challenge, and it's always like a constant negotiation.
Yeah. So what do you want to tell every client or every lead that you've ever spoken to that's like, hey, we want to build out all of these features and we want it done in the next like 2 months? Like, what do you want to just like get it out of your chest and tell them?
Yeah, I think just kind of reiterating the reality that we can just add to this later, like right away, right? Like let's just get something that works out the door quickly. You're going to be way more happy. You're going to see progress, and then build that kind of version 2 backlog, whatever you want to call it. Like, let's, you know, fill that list up and we can just start delivering on that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think staying focused on getting something out the door is, I mean, they'll end up being happier in the long run.
Yeah, that's much nicer than what I was thinking. For me, it's like, you're fucking crazy. Like,
stop it.
That's what I would tell them. Like, you want all of that?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. I think it, yeah, for me, it's always the why. Like, you, especially in building an MVP, and especially if it's the client's first product that they're ever launching, why is it so important to you that you have everything right, you know, the first time around? You're not going to get it. So apparently YouTube started as a dating app.
Really? Interesting.
Which, yeah. So it's so crazy that like you can have a concept and completely pivot. And so what I would tell, you know, my past clients or leads or whoever who is looking to do 100 things, it's like, let's just get one thing right and then move on to the next step.
I definitely have those conversations with clients, you know, and we sort of call them nice to have features, right? Like that's something that's nice to have. You don't need that. Like, let's ignore that for now. We'll do that later. You know, also sort of telling them you're never going to think of everything right as you're building. Like, yeah, you want to include everything, but you're not going to think of it all. So why try? It's better just to, you know, get something out quick and then iterate on it, because yeah, I mean, you're never going to know. And then you're going to launch it. You're going to get feedback and you're going to change it all anyway. So it's why.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna change
yeah.
It all.
So like, why invest so much time and money up front when you know that's going to happen, or, you know, we know that's going to happen. So yeah.
I've seen horror stories of founders coming to us and saying like, oh, we spent like close to 7 figures on this MVP. And like, I don't know, they either launched and failed or barely even launched their product out in the market. And they just spend all this money and time on like building something that they've never even tested and iterated on. It's really sad, to be honest. Yeah. What advice would you have for product managers who are in this position of having to tell clients about, you know, having this conversation about scope creep?
Yeah, and you're right. The sort of default is just to say yes to everything. And I think you kind of nailed it, right? Having that sort of business mindset in mind when you're working on the product is important, right? So thinking about what's going to bring the most value to the client and for the, you know, lowest amount of money. So they can basically, you know, pitch that stuff back to the client. So the client asks for something crazy or fancy or something, and they can go, you know, yeah, that's cool. Let's save that for later. Let's do this instead, because it's going to save you money. It's going to save you time. No business owner is going to be mad when that comes back at them, right? Like, oh, it's going to save you money. Yeah, for sure. Like that's the smart business decision. So I think if they kind of understand that business piece of it, then they can use that as basically ammunition to push back on the client and say, no, like this is the right thing to do at this point in time.
You mentioned before our interview, you mentioned that, you know, one of the things that you have expertise on is value-based product decisions. So what does that mean? And how does that differentiate from like thinking about making business goal-related decisions? Or are they the same thing?
They're sort of the same thing, but basically making value-based decisions. So you want to pick out the features that are going to give the highest impact to the client. So, you know, the sort of core business modules you want to build first, and then, you know, stuff that comes sort of the fluff that goes around the rest of that, you know, do that at the end, right? So An example of that would be, you know, if it's a project management tool that you're building, you want to basically build the Kanban board or whatever the kind of management piece of it is first. And things like notifications or being able to tag users and comments or something, that could come later, right? You can still use the software, start testing, start, you know, managing projects with it without some of those like nice to have kind of features that do improve the workflow and you do want to add eventually, but are not affecting sort of the functionality, the core functionality of the system.
How do you get the team and how do you get the clients to prioritize, like, what is the like the building blocks of it? I can't remember what word you were saying.
Like the modules. Yeah.
The modules. Yeah. Cause like a client could say like a client might say like, okay, yeah, Kanban board, that's a core part of the module, but so is being able to message, you know, the team, and that's how our product is different than Trello. And then, you know, we also incorporate a timer where people can clock in. I don't know. I'm just making this shut up. But how do you then have this conversation to get the teams to prioritize when everything's always so important?
Yeah, you kind of step back, and we do the same thing when we go and estimate projects or design projects or develop. Like it's all kind of the same workflow. If you step back and get the client to talk through the application in terms of like how a user would use it. So, you know, all right, what do they have to do first? They have to log in. And then when they log in, what do they see? Oh, they see a dashboard and they can click on, you know, this module that opens up their Kanban board view. All right. And then what happens? Well, they can add an item to the project. Okay. And then what can they do? Oh, they can move it across the board. So if you get them to sort of talk through the application and how a user would use it, they're probably going to prioritize the things that are the highest value first. And then they'll get down and remember the like nitty gritty kind of smaller stuff later. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really good way to structure how you develop something, how you design something, in terms of like the user flow and going through sort of the most important things that a user would do.
Mm. And what are some other key factors you consider when making value-based product decisions?
Picking things out that the business could not function without, right? So if you took out, you know, the chat module of a social media application, right? It's probably not going to be useful. So kind of identifying those things that the business would absolutely need to, like, if you're going to go and launch the application and start using it right away, like, what do you absolutely need to have? So kind of pulling those out and setting priorities based on that helps a lot.
How do you measure success? On the value that you deliver to your customers,
like on a project itself,
yeah, or a product that you've built out.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I think measuring success is helping them get to market. So if we can build something and help them get to market, and you know, not necessarily sell it, but help them add to the product and add value to the product in a way that they can add users and they start to scale their business. I think that's how we measure success the most here, because we tend to, you know, want to be like the technical partner to our clients. And it's not just like build a product, get it out the door and we're done with you. It's more like a, you know, we're here for the long haul. We're your partner. We want to build this application, build a second version, keep adding to it. Help you pivot if you need to, right? So sort of our measure of success is if the client ends up being successful and you know, building a product that's actually like useful and gets out into the market.
Mm. And you said it's a loaded question. I want to unravel that a little bit more. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, there's sort of different levels of success, right? Like completing the project within some, you know, on budget or on time or something like that. Those are also kind of measures of success. But yeah, I mean, to me, the sort of highest level of success is if we build something that is, you know, useful and gets out into the market and people want to use, right?
How do you measure success on yourself?
me personally, it's sort of the success of the team. So I'm constantly trying to, you know, coach them to be better, finding ways for them to work closer together, and you know, constantly looking for ways to replace myself. So if I can get other people, you know, to do everything that I can do without me having to step in and kind of put my input in, then that's sort of my personal measure of success. They're able to do their jobs. They can work independently. They can work together, and I can step back and be not useful. Then perfect. Then I've succeeded in building a team that can, you know, build products and do their jobs and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, that sounds awesome to not be needed. How does one go about doing that? Like, I would like to not be needed.
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to identify the things that go into operating the business, right? So you want to build out the teams to manage the day-to-day stuff on their own, you know, managing clients, communicating with the clients, gathering requirements, you know, doing their individual jobs, designing, developing, managing the projects. So, you know, getting them comfortable and to a point where they can do all that kind of stuff on their own, and then kind of empowering like these like department leads and people in the company that really excel at their jobs to kind of be there to support the other roles at the company, so they can coach, they can train, and it sort of becomes this little like ecosystem of, you know, people that are helping each other out. And once that kind of structure is in place, then you do have the opportunity to step back a bit. And that's really the goal, right? As a leader, to, you know, step back from the day to day a little bit, and then you can focus on, you know, strategic stuff, or, you know, starting a new line of business or something like that, right? But yeah, you do have to get the right kind of structure in place to help and keep everybody supported and growing and stuff, kind of together at the company.
So that structure, would you say it's a little bit more trial and error, or do you have a systematic way of building that structure that's worked for you in the past?
A little bit of both. It has been trial and error for sure. I think what's working for us at the moment is, you know, you said companies are, you know, often quite siloed, right? So there is sort of these departments at any kind of like product or agency type company, right? So you've got groups of developers, designers, managers. So, you know, having those silos kind of self-contained, and having somebody that can oversee them, like I said, a sort of department lead that can help kind of grow and coach that department, and then also work with the other leads. So there's like that problem-solving piece where they can be sort of self-healing in terms of, you know, identifying problems, working together to solve them.
Yeah, I guess, how do you then like empower people to have that ownership, and where does the accountability fall, I guess, when there's an issue in the problem? Issue in the
company? Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately accountability falls back on me, right? Back on the leadership. And, you know, there's always going to be areas to improve and gaps in the process and stuff like that that needs to be kind of adjusted and resolved. I think you want to not really place blame, but, you know, take accountability for it. Yeah, we have this problem. I mean, it's your team in the end, right? So yeah, we've got this problem. How could we solve it? Get ideas from everybody and come up with something that works, right? You know, get them to brainstorm, come up with some ideas, bring them to you, talk through it, and then roll it out, right? We do a lot of kind of trial runs on resolutions to things, right? So they'll come up with something like, I think this is going to fix this problem. All right, let's try it on one project, or, you know, one situation, and we'll go and see if it helps. And if it does, then we roll it out to the other projects. But yeah, you're constantly kind of tinkering with things and kind of patching holes and stuff, right?
Yeah. Always putting out fire. Always
putting out fires, yeah.
Yeah. one of the common themes that I've been hearing from you on this interview is coaching your team mm-hmm. members. I think that's so important, like just being able to mentor and lead by example and being able to coach people to essentially take over your job or like get so that you can get replaced or whatever the phrase that we were mm-hmm. saying was. What techniques do you have or what advice do you have for someone who wants to start coaching their team members to be better?
Yeah, it is super important. I think the big piece of it is time, which is tough for leaders, right? Because it's not something you have a lot of, but you do need to spend time with the people you want to coach. And that's why those like one-on-one calls I was talking about earlier are so important, because it gives you the opportunity to sit down and just kind of do a pulse check. Like, how are they doing? How's their week going? What problems are they having? And if you can kind of get them talking about what's going on, then it's easy for you to, you know, step in, you know, try this, do this, like bring your experiences to them and kind of, you know, empower them with those experiences. You want to distill down as much of that knowledge that you have into the rest of your team. Because, you know, like you said, you're hiring younger people, you know, new product managers, right? They don't have all this experience with product or experience with clients, and that's fine, right? But you want to give them the opportunity to learn from you, and that obviously takes time. But you know, having those calls or sessions to help them kind of understand how things work and why you made decisions on certain scenarios and stuff. It just comes down to putting in the time and helping them kind of grow as individuals.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, you have to put in that time. You have to help guide them through that process. But man, like, so many of us, we just say, we don't have enough time. We don't have enough time. But it's crazy. Like, the more time you actually put into helping your team, the more time you actually create for yourself in the long
run. Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, that's always, like I said, that's my goal, is to get everybody to a place where they don't need me anymore. Right. You're constantly trying to train people to do their job better than you can do it. Right. So, it's an investment. That's all it is. Right.
Yeah.
You're investing in the people that work at the company so you can step back and go do something else, right?
Exactly. Everything should be an investment. Yeah. Well, David, we're running out of time. Is there anything else that you'd want to share with our community?
I think, you know, basically just sort of summarizing the call today, right? You know, really empowering your team, whether you're a product company or an agency, making sure that they have the support they need, constantly, you know, making sure the team is learning from, you know, you and from each other. I think that's really the core to success in building these strong teams is, like I said, empowering people, making sure they have the support they need, constantly coaching them, meeting with them, kind of distilling that information down across the company, and, you know, working on good products through, you know, kind of, like I said, iteration, and you know, helping clients or helping your teams understand where the value is, and then delivering kind of on that value based on priority.
I love that. Thank you so much for summarizing that. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, where's the best place that they can find you?
I think LinkedIn's probably the best place. I'm also on Twitter, both just under my name. And yeah, pretty easy to find, I think.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, David. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to our latest episode, and we would like to invite you to check out our other episodes for more thought-provoking discussions and inspiring stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media @WanderStudio and listen to a new episode every week.